people are more likely to engage with you on the likes of LinkedIn if they have seen other elements of your work off that platform.
Welcome to the Contenting Business Podcast. To create the business you've always dreamt of, you need the tools, skills, and confidence to get customers who really care about and desire what you offer.
This is the place you'll come to listen to advice and debate on business and marketing, as well as how some of the biggest challenges can be overcome.
Welcome back. I hope everyone is very well. And today we're going to be talking about how you should spread your social. So do you want to elaborate a little further?
Yeah, you shouldn't limit your social activity to just one or two platforms, because it's likely that your audience reside on more than one or two platforms.
Sounds simple, doesn't it? But as we know with anything in life, these things could be quite complex. So what are the reasons you feel that people do limit their platforms? Is it because people don't understand the different platforms and how the nuances of them? Or is it down to actually just sheerly the workload? To put lots of things in lots of places is hard. What do you think the reason is people tend to make this mistake?
I think you nailed it there when you said all of that, really. You know, there's the time to understand the platforms. There's the time to create the content for the different platforms that's suitable for different platforms. There's the time to deploy all that to the different platforms as well. It's all about time. And we always say this about social activity and always on content in general, don't we? We always say that time is the limitation.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if in a B2B land, I think there's a really easy sort of trap people fall into. I think this is where it's more prominent, is when you're running a B2B business, you have, say, it's a lead gen, you're dealing with buyers at different levels. You assume that customer is in LinkedIn, in buying mode. That is where I put my content because that's where they exist. However, where do you spend more of your time absorbing content? I would expect it's when you're in the evening watching TV with your family, watching Instagram, when it's sitting on the loo, scrolling TikTok. We all do it. Don't deny, we all do. But you know, that's the mistake. People feel they have to engage with the individual when they're in fully work mode. As we know, and we know fully well, people are more likely to engage with you on the likes of LinkedIn if they have seen other elements of your work off that platform.
Yeah, that repeated touch points that we've talked about before, you know, that encountering a brand multiple times before you actually take any sort of action or do any sort of engagement. So even though we're online, we've still got the fun bit. And what is it today, Rob?
So today we are going to surprise each other potentially and say a fact about myself and Simon equivalently that we may not know about each other, bearing in mind we've probably known each other or certainly worked together for God, must be going on 17 years, maybe. I think, is it that long? Must be.
I had to rack my brain to actually think of some things that you didn't know. So that just goes to show how much we probably overshare.
Okay, shall I go first? Okay, so I currently hold the record as the fastest tiger to complete the Great North Run.
Oh, wow.
When I was actually the marketing manager for Bradstone, which is a paving company, way, way back early in my career, and they were sponsored at the time. They sponsored the Leicester Tigers, and I had the bright idea of thinking, I know I can get the Leicester Tigers, I can get Bradstone on the TV in the papers by running the Great North Run as their mascot, which seemed like a great idea, apart from my tail fell off and got stitched back on by St. John's Ambulance. The whole way, everyone was calling me Garfield. I lost a hand on the train on the way home, so the club weren't very happy, and I didn't appear in any clips on the news, TV or anything. It was a complete disaster.
Wow, I really didn't know that.
Okay.
I can't believe you never told me that.
It's not something you really come up in conversation.
I've got a simple one to start with, which I don't think you know. I don't like pancakes.
Don't like pancakes?
I'm an oddball. I know it sounds absurd, does anybody not like pancakes? But I don't. I they really don't do anything for me. The family love them. I can just about do them with things like bacon and maple syrup on, you know, to kind of mix it up a bit. But yeah, anytime that the big stack of pancakes made in the kitchen, anytime it's pancake Tuesday or Shrove Tuesday, I'm not fussed at all. I think that's weird. I don't often hear people say that they don't like pancakes.
I don't think that's that weird in that I don't not like them, but I'm probably similar in that it's, yeah, I see people, there's a place at Centre Parks called, I can't think, called the Pancake House, I think it's called, and people go to Centre Parks and flock to it, and I'm not that bothered. So there you go, we've got that in common. They're okay.
There you go.
But I don't quite get the hysteria, put it that way. It's probably the last thing I choose on a breakfast menu.
So you know what? So I don't feel alone in the world anymore. And I'm glad I shared this. I feel so much better.
Good. So what would you advice would you give then to people who are using, say, one primary platform? They know they should be doing other things. What sort of, how should you think about the platforms differently? Because I think that is also a mistake people make, is they feel that one, you can take the piece of content that was right for LinkedIn and put it on TikTok and put it on Twitter and put it on Facebook and put it on Instagram and put it on YouTube Shorts. How respectful do you think you need to be of the platforms specifically and their audiences?
You know, I think that, I think sometimes it's overthought. When people say about making content that's super specific for each platform, I think you can take a balance. I don't think you need to only do dances for TikTok and only do, you know, brand voice stuff for LinkedIn and only do reels on Instagram and only do posts on Facebook and those kind of things. I think tailoring the delivery of the content to the platform is probably more just to make it platform friendly, you know. So if you've, there's loads more on TikTok than just there's dances and effects and things like that. You know, there are just informational posts, as we've talked about before. There's recipes and things like that and that you can follow. So I think if you do have, say, a bit of business content, a bit of B2B content, I think it's just tweaking it to make it feel more comfortable and more natural on the platform. You know, so I know you can do image posts on TikTok and things now, but I would absolutely advocate only really doing video on there. And I think that if you do a video and even if that video is quite, a long story based video that overviews your brand and you've posted the entire thing on LinkedIn, I think, and you can do the same on Facebook potentially. I think then when you take it over to TikTok, you probably want to trim it so it's starts at the most exciting point, or maybe has an engaging bit to start with that then is revisited later, or, you know, just a re-edit of it, which doesn't have to be a massive, you know, reshoot. It doesn't have to suddenly have a whole different soundtrack over the top or anything. I think it can just be tweaked to tailor for the platform. So I think when people say about making it platform specific, I think people kind of potentially take that a bit too far and say it has to be hyper specific. But ultimately it's still got to be natural to your brand, hasn't it? It's got to be, it's got to feel right. Like this is this represents your company, rather than abandoning your tone of voice and abandoning what your brand stands for just to fit in with the crowd, you know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think I see some things on, say, TikTok, which are slightly jarring in that they are uber, uber, uber polished. And it stands out a bit like a sore thumb. I think in that instance, they would be more mindful to think of perhaps using the behind the scenes footage of what they put on there was excellent, But actually, I think the TikTok audience would have potentially been more engaged with the behind the scenes element of what they were then showing, and then signposting people back to, say, YouTube to watch the full thing. I think that's where there you can use the other platforms to signpost back to your main point, your main place where your best content lives. I think that's something people forget, because you can have a lot, as I say, a bigger, meatier piece of content, like a recipe, for example. If you're a aspiring YouTube baker, as an example, have the full, glorious edited how-to video on YouTube, for example, but then have the quick fire edit of that process, or just the opening of the oven to the final reveal, but then sign people back to where the best part, where you really want to grow your audience, where you really want to build, make sure that's where the holy grail is and send people there.
That's a good point, isn't it? You know, using one social platform to point to another. And you could even do that. It doesn't even need to be YouTube, does it? Say it's like, if we stick with the B2B analogy, that edit, short, snappier edit that is more TikTok friendly of your flagship video or your branded video could point over to LinkedIn. You know, and take people there. If you want to grow your community on LinkedIn, then, you know, you could potentially use other social platforms to signpost back to LinkedIn itself.
Yes, 100%. I think there's one tactic which I don't do enough, and I see people do, and I think it's such an obvious thing to do, is the repurposing of a Twitter post or X, however you want to call it, whichever day of the week it is. But you see it so clearly, people have a really text-based tweet, as it were, and they just copy and paste that as an Instagram post, and they're self-promoting the two platforms instantly. You're more inclined to find that person on Twitter. You're enjoying the content on Instagram, but you're more likely to then go and find them on Twitter, because you think this is the way they're putting out that kind of content. I think that's such an obvious thing to do. I don't do it enough, but I think it's something that, you know, as a real simple starting point, if you want to pick a platform, pick Twitter and repurpose what you're saying on Twitter elsewhere as a starting point. But it really depends where you're trying to build your notoriety, your brand, your product, business, whatever it might be. I do think there's a place to find where you think you naturally sit. Make that the holy grail social platform and use all the others to your advantage to boost that one.
I think getting a understanding of exactly where your audience reside is really important when it comes to social. Because when we say about spreading more than just one or two networks, we're not talking about going to, you know, every single social media platform known to man, and posting absolutely everything on every channel. Again, part of understanding your customer is about understanding the platforms that they actually use. So, you know, sussing out where the typical audience resides, for instance, between TikTok, YouTube Shorts, and Snapchat. They're kind of similar in, and Reels for Instagram, they're kind of similar in their format. So does that actually mean that the typical customer or your typical audience uses all of those formats, or is there a more popular one? You know, it's going to be different for everybody. I know for my daughter, for instance, and I know she's only 13, but she does use all four of those. Well, actually, she doesn't use Instagram. She's not on Instagram or Facebook, but she uses TikTok, she uses Snapchat, Snapchat, and she uses YouTube Shorts. So if she was a target audience for something, it would be that brand's interest to put their content across those three platforms, you know. But obviously, like I say, you know, her and I think a lot of her other generation aren't too fussed about Instagram, certainly not Facebook. So, you know, if a brand understood that about her and an audience similar to her, they would be, you know, there you go. There's three platforms: YouTube Shorts, TikTok, and Snapchat, which are absolutely where you need to be posting. And you know that Facebook and Instagram are less of a priority. The good news there is that the format is near identical, really. You know, tall, short video, kind of loud and engaging, certainly for an audience such as her, if that was the case. So it isn't a case of going, okay, we need to just absolutely post on every platform. No, there are going to be platforms that aren't suitable for you, but equally don't be closed-minded in the sense of, well, we're a business, so we don't do anything on TikTok because we're a business and TikTok's not a business place. Well, you know, that person in that business that you're targeting is a person that may use TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and the other platforms.
You've said everything absolutely right then. All I heard was I'm old, that Instagram is not where the kids hang out anymore. Wow. I was aware that Facebook, I feel like, yeah, is, I can see why that's going that way. But I try not to believe that I'm too old for Instagram, but I probably am. Oh no, I'm not too old for Instagram. It's now, it's too middle-aged for the younger audience.
I saw a movie where they were talking about social media, and they said this, one of the persons in the movie said, "Oh, are you going to post on Facebook like an old person?"
Wow!
And I just thought, oh dear.
Wow.
We were around when Facebook appeared, and Instagram and everything that's followed.
Okay, let's do another interesting fact. We've covered the pancake and tiger debacle. Now, I'll go straight away with mine. Now, this is the one I think you know, but I intend, when I'm a multimillionaire, to hide my money in the Channel Islands because I was born on the island of Jersey.
And I did not know that either.
No, I only lived there very briefly. My dad was a bank manager, I believe, on the island for only about, I think it's about a year, and I happened to turn up during that year. So I think I only lived there myself for something like 9 months. But being a little tax haven that it is, it might prove useful one day. Let's hope.
But you'll return to your roots.
With my millions. Over to you.
My fact is that when I was young, well, you know, to those of you who don't know me, I walk with a little bit of a limp. That I've kind of had all my life. Part of it is a slightly tilted pelvis, but I've actually got tightness that runs down the back of my right leg. And I don't think you know, Rob, that when I was very young, I think maybe 4, maybe, I had an operation on my Achilles tendon to cut it halfway through, to actually loosen the tendon and give me more flexibility. Otherwise, I think I would have had a very severe limp, actually. Well, so there you go. A little bit of a, that's a very personal one, but you know, at least you know me a little bit better.
Thank you for sharing. No, that's interesting. I didn't know about the surgery at all. I think I've obviously noticed that you have ever such a slight limp, but never really thought why or how, or you know, ever. It's not really something you even think about, but there you go. Little detail. Thank you very much.
Well, I was so young that even though it was going on quite a major thing, the only thing I remember was being leaving the hospital, and they gave me a Zimmer frame to try and walk out of the hospital. And so they said, come on, you're gonna try and walk and get around with this Zimmer frame. And so I started to walk down the corridor and just managed to just tap my foot down on the floor, you know, just because, you know, you can't help it, you know. And my foot just touched the floor ever so slightly, and just the pain was excruciating. And my dad had to carry me out in his arms because I was in tears, because I was in so much pain.
Wow.
felt like how a footballer feels or something when he pops or something when they're playing. Yeah.
Wow. So I think one element that's very misunderstood is how YouTube has become more of a B2B platform. Well, when I say B2B platform, it's still where people go primarily for lots of their sort of entertainment, you know, watch their favorite YouTubers and the like. But in a recent study, it actually showed that YouTube Shorts after LinkedIn are the best place for B2B content. And it's not something you'd necessarily associate with YouTube, but the fact that you can post like a social media platform, there is Shorts now. They've clearly seen that they can own long form, short form, the whole conversation. And if you can hook somebody within YouTube with a short to be so close to then showing them your YouTube video where probably your hero content lives, is a really, really powerful tool. And obviously Google being Google, as they know, can then use that from an advertising perspective, retargeting and so on and so on. Google are making some very clever moves, very quietly. They're not really promoting shorts, but people in the know, in the content space, have been talking about YouTube Shorts are kind of an undiscovered little almost hack at this stage. So few people are using them, but what a tool available to businesses and individuals trying to grow their audience.
I guess the thing with YouTube is there's, as opposed to the other social platforms, it's an intent thing, isn't it, with YouTube? When people are on YouTube, they usually have the intention of finding out something. You know, people use it as a search engine. They have the intention of finding out something or sitting down and watching a piece of content. And so, yeah, if you can, rather than trying to kind of, you know, throw your content in someone's face that is kind of, you know, generally what's done through social, to try and get their attention as they're scrolling, it's a different story with YouTube because there is a level of scrolling. You just scroll through and the updates of the videos and things, but with the shorts, they generally appear at the top. They'll come up in search results. You know, that there's, and actually just to elaborate the points of posts, because the posts are a different thing from shorts again. The posts are like literally like a Facebook post, and you can even post your own video. So you put your video on YouTube on your channel, but, and then you can actually create a post where you can write some copy and feature your video, which is actually different from just the normal, you know, your video appearing in someone's feed. So again, you've kind of got the social thing of trying to popping up while people are scrolling, but again, the there's just a baseline level of intent on YouTube, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what YouTube's long play is, but they're definitely trying to. I think what I admire about YouTube is they haven't settled with being one thing. They are the best place for video content, bar none, but they've not settled for that. They're really looking at how they can bring a younger audience, exactly as you said, like your daughter as an example, who wouldn't traditionally hang out there. But equally, there is, you know, my daughters are quite young and they use YouTube Kids. So they're very happy with YouTube as a platform. If they can then capture that younger audience to be there from a social media perspective, not just the sort of content they like to watch and absorb, it could be a really, really strong win. I wonder if that is the direction they've gone down. It's actually they've identified they've got a very young captive audience in terms of absorbing video content. Why not keep them there from a social media engagement perspective? Could be the play.
Yeah. Well, the TikTok obviously shook up the whole entertainment space, you know, taking what's good about YouTube, but actually making it shorter, making it snappier. And then YouTube have come back actually really well on that, and have managed to, like you say, carve out the interest from all generations. Mm. So definitely for brands, for whether it's B2B or B2C, don't overlook YouTube in terms of the short form video. Not just long form, and in terms of the actual posting activity as well, because you don't have to just post your own videos. You can post just like I said on Facebook or anything else. You can post an image. You can post a text update. You can post a short clip, mm-hmm. or you can post one of your own videos and highlight it and put some copy around it and put some context around it, rather than just your video appearing in a feed with a title and nothing else. Really, really powerful.
Absolutely.
Okay, final fact. I'll go first this time.
So when I was in primary school, I was taken to the headmaster's office on a weekly basis, pretty much, maybe even a daily basis or every few days, for talking too much. I talked too much. I talked so much that the teachers couldn't get me to shut up and therefore ended up having to send me to the headmaster's office on a regular basis.
See, that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Because, well, I'm not surprised, A, because you talk a lot. But equally, how education's kind of changed, because it's sort of encouraged now for children to talk more and not be the shrinking violet in the classroom and, you know, talk when you should be talking. But yeah, it seems strange to punish somebody. I imagine, knowing you as I do, that you weren't being disruptive. I imagine you were just being really chatty and maybe distracting people around you. But that seems a bit unfair.
I felt so at the time. I think it was the fact that it was the distraction of other people was the problem. It was it's all fine, you know, if you've done your work or if you've got thoughts or something, but you're distracting everyone else. I don't think it made a difference though, because as you say, I still talk too much.
No, yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll throw in mine. This is, again, it's not a very exciting one, but I actually was responsible for the closure of the Waitrose in Billericay High Street based on my running of the internal bakery. I repeatedly opened the oven door too soon as head baker on a Sunday and it would set the fire alarms off regularly, and to the point where the store actually had to get evacuated on one occasion.
Because they thought there was a fire?
Yeah, I'd open the doors. You did the baking, you had to get the bread was effectively kind of frozen in the freezers. You get your baguettes and so on, you put it on these great big trays, you'd walk it into this huge oven, but you had to leave the oven, even when it was finished, you had to leave it for, I think, something like a minute just to let the temperature drop, because it was heat sensors rather than smoke detectors, because obviously steam and smoke and all sorts would come out. And I'd always be running a little bit behind and I'd just wrench that door open, second the alarm went off, and the alarm too was cooked, and lo and behold, everything was all kicking off, and I got moved on to frozen produce quite quickly. So there you go.
Was there not a kind of educational training program to help you not do that, or was it just like me, you just didn't listen and carried on anyway?
I think there was an educational program. However, I think, you find in supermarket kind of retail, there is very often 16-year-olds kind of in charge of shops at the weekend. You know, the people on the meat counters at the weekends were, you know, peers from my school, the people on the tech outs. So they would just quite happily have fairly, you know, hardworking, nice kids, but slightly, you know, naive to some of the finer details, in charge of quite important jobs in a supermarket. Well, I found my way eventually, but it wasn't uncommon for there to be some problems.
So if the fire alarm goes off in our building, then we, you know, there's an oven. Maybe Rob's left an oven open or opened a microwave too soon or something.
Pretty much, pretty much.
I think we need to address the issue that is how difficult it is to actually post across all these networks, because that is usually, dear listener, your issue is, you know, the time to be able to post across all these different channels, you know, the various amount of logins that you've got, the whole scheduling of posts as well. You know, if you're versus like posting at the time, when you want things to go at a certain time, if you've got, you know, six networks to post across, that you can't just post them all at once unless you use some kind of tool.
And as we know, the tools aren't always the best. I think that's where there's some flaws, that no one tool yet, and maybe it's a winning tool when it does, is able to take that burden off you to post the right time in the right formats on the right channels every time. There's always a few instances where you'll get a prompt to upload your video to YouTube, but it won't manually do it. It'll work for a business account, but not a personal brand. there is still, I think there are, we've trialed lots of different solutions, not found one yet that is perfect, but we're finding better tools, but there is still a large amount of manual work required to do it well, and to do it accurately and to make it foolproof. Unfortunately, there isn't a one stop shop solution for all right now.
Not that we know of. So you can use these tools, and I absolutely would advocate using a tool, a publishing tool that can, you know, connect to multiple social media accounts and post all at once, you know, the same content across multiple channels. Because it will drive some efficiencies and it will make it easier, but you'll find very quickly that there's usually something that you've got to do manually, like you said, having to upload a video manually because it doesn't support that. What we find a lot is on the Facebook and Instagram side, authentication codes being, you know, if it's for a personal account, you know, the person having to get an authentication code off their device. If you're using, you know, if one of the team is posting on behalf of someone else, that can be quite awkward, quite difficult. And I think just that in itself as well, whether you're using a tool or not, logging into different platforms from one to the other, can be quite a laborious process.
Yeah. And I think it shows that level of planning required, that level of thought that you really need to, if you're going to do this at scale and you're planning to post for multiple brands, potentially in multiple places, you need a really robust system and some processes to make sure you do it right every time. Certainly if you're responsible for posting other people's content, it's one thing missing one for yourself because you hadn't understood there'd be an authentication code coming through. But if you're responsible for other people's content, you need to do some real due diligence to make sure you're using the right platform. Or alternatively, you do it manually and you have a real structure of how you're doing that.
Yeah, having a schedule and a plan of your content, when you're going to post it, what day, what time, I think that helps an awful lot. I think the advice that I would then give is identify where you need to manually log into systems and platforms, like with Facebook or Instagram, having to potentially log in directly, make that post, schedule it and upload your video, whatever. Have your copy written ready ahead, in a separate document, so you're not writing on platform. And then, you know, where you can plug in a publishing tool that can maybe automatically post to LinkedIn and TikTok and some of the others, they're a little bit more flexible on the logging processes. You know, you can forward plan even more then. So, you know, you can come up with a posting schedule, pre-write a load of posts, pre-create a load of content, get it scheduled in your planning tool, and then just have a reminder set in your diary to log in manually on certain platforms, just to get that manual work down. And also, you know, we know that sitting down and having a session coming up with multiple post ideas ahead of time, rather than writing on the day and what am I going to write about today and trying to shoot an off the cuff video, is always a better solution.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
So, as we said, consider your audience, work out where they're residing when it comes to social, what networks they're using, which they're using most common, which maybe they're not using at all, and make sure that you're present on those platforms, and also make sure that your content is tailored to an extent to be right on those platforms. As we say, it doesn't need to be hyper-tailored, doesn't need to break your brand voice or be something that's just not natural to you, but certainly consider tweaking and adjusting. And certainly when it comes to the size, the actual, you know, physical size of the content itself, square or tall or wide, picture, video, just make those considerations, make sure it's tailored to the platform, make sure you're present on those platforms for your audience. And as we always say, plan ahead wherever you can, find efficiencies, because this stuff takes time, but it's absolutely worth it. It's how you remain front of mind, and it's how you'll win in the long term.
So thank you all for listening or watching, depending on how you absorb your content. And yeah, if there's any topics or themes you'd like us to cover, please do comment, like and subscribe, and we will catch you all soon.
Bye.